5:30, so we're going to call the meeting. And we'll have a roll call.
Yep. Andy Berg.
Here.
John Franco.
Here.
Boyd Frederick.
Here.
David Hallman.
Present.
Mark Nordigan.
Here.
Zach Rodriguez.
Here.
Youth and Governance, Catherine Bogdala.
Here.
Yeah. And Elizabeth Van Kamen.
Here.
And I'm here.
And Gabriel. They usually circle around.
Citizen comments. We have a pretty full agenda, so what we're going to try to do is we're going to try to limit to...
I have 5 minutes.
5 minutes to each person. So, okay. Start with the first one.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks to the committee, and thanks for the indulgence to be able to speak on a couple different issues during citizens' comments versus waiting until later in the day. My name is Todd Onstead. I'm here speaking as a citizen today, but I also am pleased to serve as the state representative here in the 65th Assembly District. I'd like to speak on a couple issues that you have on the agenda today. One is on the automatic voter registration. And you know, certainly, I guess there's a couple of issues that you'll be talking about. One, just recognizing Voter Registration Day. Obviously, I think that we're all in favor of voter registration. In terms of automatic voter registration, I'd just like to point out that currently the law of the land in 12 different states now, plus the District of Columbia. And I just think that it makes a lot of sense in terms of people being automatically re-registered to vote. I think that as a government body, it's in our best interest to make sure that it's easier for people to vote, not harder for people to vote. But I'd also like to speak on medical marijuana today. And I've brought along a few different things, a few different facts on medical marijuana. There's actually 30 states in the District of Columbia that now support medical marijuana. And as we know, it has been touted, and I believe it to be true, that it helps a lot of different medical conditions, including epilepsy, glaucoma, PTSD, severe pain associated with chronic illnesses like cancer. Back in 2013, I think that this number would certainly even be higher now, the New England Journal of Medicine found that 76% of doctors support the increased availability of medical cannabis. It's obviously a safer alternative to management of chronic pain versus opioids, and we know where the use of opioids has led us. The other thing is that veterans groups throughout the country have largely been responsible for kind of a movement in the veterans groups to allow for medical marijuana because of its impact on PTSD. So I think that that's certainly something that we need to take in mind, and also as an alternative to narcotics. On May 30th, the Kenosha News editorialized that they were in favor of a referendum on medical marijuana. And even though the state statutes don't allow for a binding resolution on anything, really, I think it's in all of our best interest to figure out exactly where our constituents stand on medical marijuana. A recent Pew study showed that 61% of people in the country support legalization of medical marijuana. I did a recent survey in the 65th Assembly District, and that was for both medical and for recreational marijuana. And the unscientific results of that study was 59%, and that was also including the recreational. I'm just going to go off track a little bit because what you'll be talking about, of course, is the medical marijuana. But I think that the numbers that I just read a couple days ago is really staggering. Between January and April 1st, 3 months, Colorado got $86 million worth of tax money as a result of marijuana. So I think that there will just come a time when Wisconsin cannot afford to legalize marijuana. And I think a good place to start is to allow those who have conditions of chronic pain and other conditions to be able to access medical marijuana. So I'd like to thank you for your indulgence in letting me to speak on these two different topics tonight. And I don't know if somebody's timing me, but somebody...
40 seconds.
Okay, I got 4 seconds. That's pretty good timing. So thanks for indulging me, and have a great meeting tonight and a great meeting later on tonight. Take care.
Thank you, Representative Evans.
If citizen comments can sign their name. Thank you.
I'll sign it.
Yeah, it's on there.
Sure. Good evening. My name is Leah Blau. I live at 8355 57th Avenue, Kenosha. I am coming to speak on behalf or in support of the automatic voter registration and National Voter Registration Day resolutions. It's said that the elections are the heart of democracy, and a person's right to vote is central to that, and which leads me to the importance of voter registration. Voting is a basic right in this country, but it takes paperwork in almost all states. With millions of new voters turning 18, becoming citizens, changing their names, getting interested in elections, or being released from prison annually, there are huge numbers of folks who need basic education on how to come into our political system. Up to 6 million eligible voters didn't cast ballots in the last election because they didn't know how to register, or they missed a deadline to vote or to register. A National Voter Registration Day and automatic voter registration would help ensure everyone is ready to go to polls on election day. So much of our political dialogue gets caught up in battleground states, presidential elections, but the reality is in almost every community in any given year, there's an important election taking place that affects schools, roads, taxes, parks, public safety, and justice, and this includes county board elections. I urge all members of the Legislative Committee to please support both the National Voter Registration Day and the automatic voter registration resolutions. Everyone deserves to have their voice heard. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Roland Pazala, private citizen and chair of Kenosha County Democratic Party. I also agree with the voter registration and the national holiday. It always amazes me when you read the news or hear the news that 85, 90, 95% of people get out and vote in the Mideastern states, Afghanistan, those places over there, and they risk their life for it. We, the United States, we can't get, we was missing 46% last election to vote. And you talk to people, well, I got to complain about this, I got to complain about that. Well, did you vote? No. We don't have a reason to complain there. That's the bottom line. And I remember in going to the national holiday, I remember as a kid, I lived in Illinois, and they used to close all the bars on election day. That was so people would be voting instead of drinking. But that's most important, because we have a different cycle of politics nowadays, and some good, some bad. I don't want to say, but I'd like to say mostly bad, but we need to change that, and the way to change that is people to go vote. I have to hear reasons why you would not have people vote, you know, the reasons why you shouldn't vote. There's two things you should do in life, is vote and die. It's things must be, you know, has to be, but it's the polls. I do poll working too, and the lines are getting longer now because people come in and they say, well, I voted here for 30 years. Well, you're not on the list because you voted every 4 years. You didn't vote midterm elections or local elections. Those are important elections just as well as presidential. And in my mind, sometimes midterm elections are more important than presidential elections because those are the people who make the bills. So I urge all of you to get behind this bill and pass it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Joe Puroy, and I live at 505 13th Street in Kenosha. I'm a District 15 resident. And I want to thank you guys for your service on the board and appreciate your work to make Kenosha County a great place to live. I'm here to ask that you approve and send to the full board the resolution recognizing National Voter Registration Day and the resolution supporting a state multi-voter law. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other citizen wish to speak? Any other citizen?
Hi, I'm John Vandehey. I'm a law student volunteer with the Wisconsin Justice Initiative. I'm here to talk about the cannabis referendum. Cannabis can help combat the opioid epidemic. Last year, Wisconsin saw 800 deaths, more than 800 deaths in 2017 alone. That was over 10 times the amount from 2000. Continues to get worse. Opioid overdose deaths have been proven to be lower in states with medicinal marijuana laws. Prescriptions and usage are also down in those states. It's not a gateway to opioids. It's an alternative for pain relief to those drugs. Why this referendum is important now. Michigan has an initiative on their ballots, and if it passes, it will be the law at the end of this year. Michigan will have it. Illinois, their top legislatures have shown that they intend for it to be the law early next year. And that's particularly important for this county because people will go there to get it. Right now, 9 states and D.C. have it. It'll be much more than that by next year. This is going to come up at the state level next year. And so the people of Kenosha deserve to talk about it. WJI's interest, Wisconsin Justice Initiative, their interest in this is the mass incarceration aspect of it. Last year, there were 17,000 arrests for possession of cannabis. It's a waste of tax money and police effort. In Wisconsin, a second offense for possession is still a felony. Those are some of the strictest laws in the nation. It has been proven to not do any good. The more you spend on it, the addiction rates don't change. That's been true since the 80s. Wisconsin, as you heard, can also raise millions in tax revenue. Colorado had $87 million, I think he said, just in the 3 months. Last year, they made $250 million from it, and Wisconsin has 500,000 more people in its state. The estimates for Wisconsin range from $138 million to as much as Colorado, $250 million a year. That can go to healthcare, roads, education. And finally, this is a non-binding advisory referendum. A vote to place this on the ballot isn't in favor of cannabis, it's in favor of giving people a voice, in favor of giving them a chance to express their opinion. Rock, Dane, Milwaukee all have it, a dozen more are considering it, and they shouldn't be the only ones to decide it. It should be a statewide effort to show the legislature what people want. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Stop this quick.
Any other citizens wish to speak? Any other citizens wish to speak? Any other citizens wish to speak? Citizen comments closed. Okay, reports from the chairperson. Well, this time I'm going to try to make it short because we have a very full agenda, so we'll try to get done before the 7:30 meeting. So I'll reserve my comments for the next time. And any comments from the committee members? Anyone? Anyone? Okay. Communications?
None.
Okay. Approval of the June 19 minutes. Everybody had the chance to check the minutes?
Move to approve the minutes.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Erditian. Did I say it right?
Works for me.
Okay. Second by Supervisor Berg, I believe. Rodriguez? Okay. We'll take a vote. We'll let the youth and government go first. All in favor? Aye. Committee members?
Aye.
Okay. And now, I guess with a guest, Senator Ben Wongard, which is going to talk to us, tell us what's going on in Madison, what they're going to do for us, maybe send us
Gabe, what do you want?
A lot of money. And, okay. Thank you, Senator. Welcome.
Rough round up.
Well, good evening, everybody. Oh, he's got a whole list for me, too. I knew you would come through.
Not just dollar signs for us.
I knew you would come through. See, he's already lost his voice. You talked. Was he already talking?
Oh, please.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
No comment.
No comment. Well, thank you for inviting me to chat with you guys tonight a little bit. I know that there's a lot of stuff going on, of course, with all the economic engines that are operating here in southeastern Wisconsin. Of course, we have a lot of issues going on with the road in Kenosha County and in Racine County, dealing with the interstate, because as soon as it gets bottlenecked up in Racine, where they're working on the interstate, that pushes vehicles down here to Kenosha too. So I think they're doing a pretty fair job of staying on top of the state with notifying people and keeping people in the loop. I know they're doing updates on a regular basis. I just attended one last night at the village of Mount Pleasant, which was really informative. So I mean, I hope you guys, if you have the opportunity, you're able to attend some of those meetings that DOT is putting on, just to kind of keep people up to speed with what's going on. Right now, of course, we're out of session. And being out of session, the next session that we'll have for a floor period, if I'm reelected in November, would be in January. So we've got quite a few things. There's probably about 15 bills that did not get through the legislature this past session that we had that we'll be reintroducing and we will be working on. And there's a whole list of those. I know one that is very important, I think, to this group and to this board, and I think other boards throughout the state, are the dark store issues. And of course the lease issues that are coming up. So I thought I'd give you a little bit of feedback on what's happening with that. I was co-author of the dark store bill, and so we worked to get that bill passed. There was some disconnect between the assembly and the senate and some of the committees. So something's passed over there, something's didn't pass over the assembly, something's passed over by us and then didn't pass. And it ended up with the confusion that was happening between the dark store legislation and the Walgreens. We'll call it the Walgreens. I hate to give them a bad name, but we'll call it the Walgreens legislation that dealt with triple net leases and those types of issues. They're actually two different issues that I think became confusing with which one was which one and how they're utilizing it. We have been talking, I think, for probably 3 or 4 years now about some of the issues that happen with dark stores. And let's focus on the dark store issue first, I think, and some of the effects that was envisioned would occur that are starting to occur now. And I think this is a really serious issue. I've been very vocal about it, as has Representative Kirkman, Representative Barca, Onstead, about this issue and about the effects of this issue. But the fact that it didn't pass and we didn't get it into legislation, we had the dark store legislation actually was pretty much a done deal. But they couldn't come to an agreement to deal with the lease legislation that was coming up. So it looked like we were going to get something settled and people were going to agree to it. And that didn't happen in the 11th hour. So neither of them passed. So what happened is they formed we have what's called the Legislative Council, which we have members from both sides of the aisle are on. And that council is charged with setting up study committees with any type of legislation that is potentially has challenges with it or is complex or maybe it's a hot button issue that we need to flush the whole thing out with, whatever that situation is. Well, this was one of those issues that I think there was just a lot of misunderstanding. We have court cases that caused some problems with how they were applying and defining some of the appraisals. So they formed a legislative study committee, which is in progress right now. I think their first meeting is going to be this next week, I think. Rocco is on that committee. So I know we have a hawk that is on that committee that knows the insides and the outsides of both the lease issue and of the dark store issue. So Rocco brings all of that experience to the table. And the idea behind these study committees is, and it's not just a smoke and mirrors type thing. It's they get stakeholders on these committees that are knowledgeable and have questions about how can we resolve this issue and what are the issues, And then what they're charged to do is they come back to the full legislative council with draft legislation to help deal with the issue. And so that's what they're charged with at this point right now. We have several. I chair a bail amendment committee, which is going to look at, we got it through the assembly, passed over there with no problem, got to the Senate, and we had a few senators that didn't understand how this bail change would be for a constitutional change that would equate public safety with flight risk for somebody who's getting bail. So I'm chairing that committee. We're going to come back with that we're going to recommend, I'm sure, a constitutional amendment that will make judges look at not only whether an individual is a flight risk, but whether or not that individual is a public safety issue. So somebody threatens to kill 12 people, as soon as they get out of here, we give them a low bail and they're back out of the street. Now we got to deal with 12 homicides. You know, so it doesn't make sense, you know, at least until that person goes through the process. So we're working on that, and that'll be coming up, I think, our first meeting's in 2 weeks. So we're starting with that. So these legislative councils, our study committees, come back in the fall then, and they'll come back to the full council, and they'll make recommendations. So I'll keep you tuned into what's going on with that and what's happening with that, with the dark store issues. And some of those other ledge council issues, I think, will be important not only to a specific group like the bail amendments with judges and how they're addressing those releases and releases back in the community, but there's 12 or 13 different study committees that they're actually doing. We're also looking at the juvenile justice system. We passed legislation, which was really a challenge to get done last year. We passed it 95-0 in the assembly. Hello? When was the last time we saw that happen? Then it got to the Senate, and it was like, wait a minute, it's not going anywhere. And so I introduced a piece of legislation that allowed us to be a little flexible with how we approached the juvenile justice system. And in the 11th and a half hour, we got an agreement that fixed the issues that our majority leader had with having some oversight in that process, and it went through 32-0. So now we're implementing that. We're going through that process. So that is going to really transform how we deal with juvenile justice and how we work with our juveniles that are going to be incarcerated. I think you're going to see the potential that there will be a huge reduction in cost, you know, for working with these young offenders. And I think it's also going to bring things so that it's more centrally located and to the area where these offenders live, so that there can be more participation by the family and by the family unit and by local resources. So we're not shipping them off to someplace where they don't have any interaction with their family or with something that they're going to be going back to that same area. There's just the connectivity isn't there, the continuity isn't there. So this is going to help with that. So that's another thing that I'm on, that we're working on. And then we're also reevaluating the prison system in general with the building structures, over the 100 buildings we have, and how we house our prisoners. So that's the other thing that we're kind of focusing on too, at least what I've been charged with to deal with. So, and we're trying to keep up to speed with all the other things going on too. So I'm here to listen to you guys. And so if you have questions that I can answer, I will make that effort. And as always, I mean, I see Gabe around once in a while, you know, and we chat about stuff. So if there's issues that you have, we'll try to deal with those issues and get a result. Andy?
When you say that the juvenile justice system is going to lower the cost of the taxpayers, yep. Now is that transferring it onto the county then?
Well, what they're looking at with the system is that we're looking at finding a county that will take on the responsibility to have that facility. And right now I know Racine's interested. They're looking at doing it, so they would be probably one that would be considered, because they're already basically doing it. So it would be more regional. Like, you guys already send most of your offenders to the ACE program, which deals with the academic children's, I can't remember what the acronym stands for now. But we started that back about 15 years ago in response to the expense of, I think it was $1.2 million we got in a bill from where we were sending our kids off to, and that's what it worked out that we had to pay in. And we said, oh my goodness, we can't continue to do that. So we had to cut staff and ask people to take cuts in pay so we could make up for that amount of money. So we started our own, basically our own juvenile detention center where we could keep them in our juvenile detention system for longer than the 30 days. And that was by working with the judges and the defense attorneys and the prosecutors so that they didn't adjudge them delinquent for a period of about 6 months so that they would be held. But everybody would agree that we're just not going to, you know, adjudicate them delinquent so we can keep them in the program and get them their GEDs and have the family involved in that. And then we changed the statutes to allow for that now so that we can do that as long as they have the programming. And that's how the ACE program got started. So they actually have, and I won't call them inmates, they have young people, I'll just call them young people. They have young people from Kenosha, Racine, Walworth, Milwaukee, and Racine are being sent to that facility. And so it's kind of like what we're looking at doing at a statewide level. So the county that chooses to do that will get some funding to help expand their facility or to build a facility to be able to do that. And then they will, through youth aides, they'll get a bump up to be able to take care of the additional staffing and stuff that it takes. So it's not just going to get dumped on the county, but instead of costing $400 a day to keep an individual there, it will be like $100 and some a day. Wow, that's an awful lot of dollars you can use someplace else. So, and the idea is not, it's not so much the money issue with it, it's the issue that, what are we doing? We're housing these kids and it's like a revolving door. So if we can get the family and the local resources engaged, I mean, we have all these different programs and they have a purpose, but if we don't acknowledge their purpose and bring them in as part of the process to this, I mean, it doesn't help to take somebody and ship them off to, you know, 5 hours from here, you know, up to Copper Falls or Lincoln Hills, and we know what issues we had there already, and then leave them up there, and then the family is disconnected. It's a five-hour bus trip to get up there, and you got an hour with them, and then you can come back. How does that work? You know, so this will allow families, and it'll allow participation by the community, you know, to help these young people identify the opportunities they have and get their educations. And I mean, I see some of these kids that have been involved in the ACE program that go through the graduation part of this to get their GEDs or their equivalent, and they're excited because they finally accomplished something. You know, so I mean, this is a real positive thing. And these young people are becoming employable. You know, so I mean, isn't that our goal, to not continue to keep putting them into the system? So I mean, that's one of the other things that we're working on.
Sir, I'm familiar with the triple net lease issue. Mm-hmm. Everything else you talked about,
okay.
I got pretty aggressive, but I've not heard this. What's going on?
Okay, so I actually took a couple notes, and how this works, I would explain here.
I mean, I know what triple net lease is.
What ends up happening is we have somebody come in and build, and then they lease it off to us. Right. So,
Walgreens is famous for that. They build it, sell it, and lease it back.
Exactly. Right. Okay, so what they end up doing is they have investors that come and invest in that building, but then for somebody to come and rent that, when Walgreens comes and rents that, it's not just the taxes, the property taxes, stuff like that. They have the water, they have the light, they have the electrical. All that stuff is included, so that's the triple net. So how do we tax them on that and keep it fair?
Who are you taxing?
Walgreens.
The lessee or the lessor?
Well,
okay.
That's the question here. Okay. So I mean, so it's been, this is where we had a Supreme Court decision that occurred. Let's see here. Municipalities are seeking to overturn a 10-year-old Wisconsin Supreme Court decision stating that property assessors cannot use the actual rent as a factor in determining the value of the property. So under the current law, Walgreens, an assessor can only use the market rent or the average rent in the area as an assessment tool. And in essence, the municipalities are seeking to assess the income generation from the property in addition to the actual brick and mortar value. So the problem becomes uniformity in application of the property tax. And this is what's causing that kind of a problem. And then we had assessors that were coming in, and the definition, they were kind of figuring out what that definition meant to them. and then they just do it. And so we had a few that kind of maybe stepped and went over a little overboard what they should actually be doing, and we had people that fought that, and now we have a case that everybody's betting their farm on. So this is the problem with the 10-year-old Supreme Court ruling. So we thought we had that kind of worked out where we could have some fairness to that, so we would have a mix of that. And that apparently did not get accomplished totally, but I think we're really close to getting something accomplished. So I think that this study committee is going to help kind of sort that out so that it's going to be a little bit fairer process. Because, you know, it's really difficult when you see somebody is being assessed way over what they should be. And we had cases where we had, you know, some of our larger retailers that they're valuing their property at $27 million, and you know they're saying, well, it's not really worth $27 million. You know, maybe it's worth, you know, $15 million, and they've gone through that assessment process and they've come to agreement for $17 or $18 million, which is probably more where it should be. You know, so I mean, this is part of the problem. And so now what's happening is the municipalities are dealing with this. Yeah, because we have the stores that are bringing the new stores, and they're saying, "Why is this store right over there that's vacant?" And but it's the same size, and so how come they're only assessed at X, and you're over assessing me over here? You know, I want their rate over there. How you're assessing them? And I mean, it's not just brick and mortar that they're actually looking at. So, and this becomes an issue with if I own the building or if I lease the building. So this is where we have the complexity with sorting that out. So our Constitution says that there has to be uniformity in how we apply our property taxes. And so we're trying to work our way through that so that we don't create another issue that we have to have the court come in and decide what we wanted them to do. So if we can get that flushed out, I will say this, I do not know of anybody else. Really, I do not know of anybody else that probably knows more about this issue than Rocco.
And you better be careful, because Rocco says you guys at the state are under assessing commercial buildings.
Well,
so he'll let you know that, I'm sure.
And I get that too. I mean, you know, so we have to listen to that.
Good.
We have to listen to that part of it too. But he's knowledgeable, you know, with the experience, the history, and everything. And you know, we did have some. I remember. It's got to be 5 years ago that we were talking about this, and we were talking about this in Pleasant Prairie. We had a meeting, and everybody was sitting around a table, and we were talking about the issue with the dark stores, and we were talking about the problem being how the assessors were applying the definitions and the handbook. They weren't following the handbook that they had, and I don't think that handbook has really changed that much. It changed a little bit, but I don't know that the education process has followed with that, because we have some municipalities, they have their own assessors that are really familiar. They know where everything is, and they know what the effects are of those neighborhoods on those properties, and they can really do a good job. And then we have some municipalities that feel that that's not a good value for them to have somebody that does just that. So they bring a subcontractor in that really doesn't have a clue. And you know, and sometimes, you know, I've seen assessments in some communities, we've talked about this in a couple of hearings that I've been at, where we have assessors that are doing this over the phone or over the internet. They don't even go look at the properties. I mean, so that creates a problem for all of us.
Sure.
So we're trying to sort through that so that we can eliminate that as a challenge and get everybody on the same page. And I think we're going to get a good piece of legislation, because I think everybody understands what's happening with this, and that's why this was a no-brainer when this came to the council, which I sit on. I sit on the legislative council, and this is a real easy one to vote for. I mean, this is, let's get the stuff. Yeah. That was unanimous.
But these two are basically linked together. Then.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
They're different, but they're very much have the same kind of a potential negative effect.
Okay.
So we're trying to resolve that all at one time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On our finance committee last week, we were discussing an issue. We had the sheriff's department before us, and we were talking about overtime. And we're always battling with overtime with the sheriff's department. And it was brought up that there's legislation supposedly going before the state with the closure of Lincoln Hills and what to do with a lot of these juvenile mandates from the court or reprimanded to where they go. And I was not entirely satisfied with the answer you gave Supervisor Burke, because when you said, oh, well, you'll have some money to build facilities, I don't know, 11th hour, I don't know if that's going to happen, and all of a sudden we're going to get a mandate that we have to house all these people. We can't do it.
No, I hear you.
So I'm just telling you right now that if the state tries to drop that on the county, we're going to have a huge problem, just so you know. So it's going to be coming to this committee
to
review.
Totally understand that frustration, and this was one of the things, as I sat in the group that talked about this around the table, both sides of the aisle, it was really actually amazing because the R's and the D's dropped off and we actually talked about some of those issues. And I mean, it's huge. We do not want to see the counties all of a sudden become the repository and they got to, you know, all of a sudden
cover
the expense.
That's where I'm afraid it's going to go, because Racine can't house all our juveniles.
They can house about 140.
Yeah, but they've got
about 20.
Well,
they're at 20 right now.
I was told they were taking ours.
Well, I don't think that's accurate, but I know that.
That's good.
I know that they could take up to 140, but they're looking at building a whole separate facility. Racine's willing to do that. 95% of the cost would be borne by the state, 5% by that county. That's how what the current formula was. And I think it was a 17% bump in youth aids to cover the additional salaried people that have to work with that. So we're making sure that the counties don't end up getting left holding the bag. I would not want to see that either. And the savings that are going to come out of that by locally housing them, using local resources, it should save. And I think they've looked at all the different models, and this should be a huge, huge, huge benefit to all the counties. And Kenosha doesn't have to have their own facility here. I mean, right now, we only have, I think it's 100 and some that are going up to Copper Falls and Lincoln Hills. They only had over 1,000. They're down to that many because they're just not sending them.
Depends on the judges and how they handle their cases. If they're going to send more youth out and we're going to get this problem, I understand
and
that
this
maybe
issue,
we're looking at regional, which is fine.
Nope, I hear
but what I don't want to, I mean, if the state saves money at the expense of the county, our taxpayers aren't saving money.
Well, the state is still going to be involved in putting dollars into it.
I don't mind a local situation where
totally
we all
understand.
Work together and we cut costs, and you know, but I don't want to have some of that local say, well, you can't get your juveniles there or stuff like that. And I don't want the state to just, here, you guys take care of it.
I get it.
Just so
we actually had the counties. I mean, when we were having the discussion around a table light like this, we had the counties. Representatives are all there. We had DHS, we had Children and Families, we had Sheriff's Associations. Everybody was there so they could hear exactly what was going on, and everybody had input, corrections, everybody. So that some of these things that weren't thought about were brought out and they were put into the bill. And the bill was kept flexible enough that we can build this out. We don't want to just dump it on somebody. We want to make sure that somebody that is an entity, whatever it's going to be, think that there's probably going to be one in this area, which would probably be Racine, because they've already said that they'd be willing and they're open to doing it. They've got the resources and everything to start the process. Probably two up in the Milwaukee area, one out in the west part of the state, one in the northern part of the state as a start. We don't know what the right number is going to be yet, and that's what's going to come out of the committee as they start working through this, because we have the legislation, the authorization already. So now it's just getting people together so we work those details out, so that they can be a little bit more precise with what those dollar amounts are going to be. And they were talking about they could build a facility for, I can't remember, I think it was $6 or $7 million. I'm just saying, they just threw a number. I said, so where'd you get that? So what do you base that on? And they really didn't know. It's okay, so then we'll make it 9. I said, no. I said, we need to know what this cost is going to be and what we're doing. So this is part of the flexibility of that legislation, that they'll flush that number out, so those dollars will be there, and the state has, I believe it's 95% that the state's going to cover.
Okay, I just want to go on record.
You're good.
Just dump that on the
county. I get you. I was a county board supervisor for 8 years, was on finance for all 8 years. I get it.
And the second thing I want to talk about is mental health. Okay. I have a big concern about that, and the last person that came and talked here from the state, from our Wisconsin counties, didn't bring that up. And I want to make sure that you guys are aware that down the road we're going to have financial issues dealing with mental health. And I think that it would be good to have that same regional situation for mental health facilities. But whatever we need to do, it's something that we're gonna, it's not gonna slow down. With the opioids, with the, you know, the veterans, with the, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that goes on that's going into this. And you know, just our society today. Hell, Republicans and Democrats, that could cause mental health issues. But, you know, I think that it's going to be a growing cost. We as a county are, I've been on it for years and years and years, and I just think that it's going to continue to grow. And we need the state to take a look at it and see what they can do as well. So keep that on your mind as well.
Can I answer that?
Yeah, I just want to, let me add something on the jail thing first, okay? After the meeting of our finance, I had the discussion with the chief deputy and what we're doing is setting up a meeting to go through and maybe bring to the committee or maybe even get together with some of the state legislators or the other counties and try to...
Well, state legislators, sheriffs, corrections people, it all needs to be worked out together. Right. And you need to sit down and have these
and
discussions. Saving money when it comes to our youth is not, you know, I understand the state wants to save money, but we don't want it dumped on
the had the conversation.
Well, the money's actually saved by the account or by the municipality because you're going to be paying less dollars in, you know, instead of paying $400 per inmate, it'll be $130 or $140
or whatever facility.
Well, this is what they're thinking it will be. You'll have that savings if they are building. The state's paying for the facility, and you know those costs should cover the initial number of people that are salaried to operate it, and then the additional bump should be able to cover any addition. And that's the thing that they have to figure out, make sure that's accurate. I totally agree.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, mental health, huge issue. I actually have a couple bills that I'm working on that are PTSD bills, dealing with mental health with law enforcement, firefighters, emergency responders. We're also dealing with mental health, and actually I authored legislation to the pilot program for the mental health that is in Racine, Kenosha, and I think Janesville or Walworth. I can't remember which of the other third place was. But we have a pilot going on right now to deal and collect data for that. It's a huge thing, and we have to look at, and we are looking at, mental health treatments in schools, in the school system now, because that is something that I think it's another place to start so that we can minimize or reduce the amount of mental health issues that we have. So it's huge. The biggest challenge we have right now with mental health and with that aspect, you know, we've done the veterans courts, we've done family courts, we've done, we do treatment courts. And we've done that, I think, trying to deal with some of those specific issues that those different groups of people have, because of the mental health issues that are connected to that, and the understanding of the mental health that's connected, like veterans, what they're dealing with coming back, PTSD issues with IUDs, and all the other things. But we need to ensure that we have facilities that people can get treatment and not go on a waiting list, and that's been a problem. And so I know up in Racine, we had the facility through Ascension. They had, I want to say, 56 beds, and they're down to, I think, 18 beds right now because they're reassessing and readjusting. I've been on the phone with Ascension and Aurora, and they're looking at things that they're going to do to enhance that because they see that as an issue too. But again, you know, the other problem we have is staffing those positions with qualified people, and that has been a little bit of a challenge too. So they're working with Gateway and Parkside both to develop skill sets in those areas so that we have people in training. I just worked with one mental health organization that does, it's not actually mental health, it's an addiction clinic, but they deal with the mental health aspect with the people that have these addictions that come in. And Gateway is actually starting a program for an intern program for counseling for counselors that will be a certified program like Gateway. So we got some really good people working on that issue too. Is it going to be solved next week? No. Do we need to be on our toes and do we need to be talking about it? Absolutely. And this has come forward and front central. So another issue that is huge. And it was,
talk about the courts. I want to see stuff done before they get to the courts.
Well, that's what this should do. This should eliminate a lot of those people going into the court system.
Anybody else?
Question right here. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. I just thank you for coming and talking with all of us. But can I have your opinion on the dark store legislation that you're co-sponsoring?
As far as what? I think it's I think the legislation that was brought forward solved a lot of the problems with how they would define what a dark store was and how they would do the assessment. Is it perfect? Probably not. But I think we have to change up what we're doing to give the municipalities some certainty with how they're doing their assessments. So I think, and we haven't passed the legislation. So sometimes what ends up happening with a piece of legislation, as we start that legislation through the process, and we started by getting ideas like from here, and that comes forward, we get our committees and we do public hearings and we listen and we try to solve as many of those issues as we can. And then we'll have people say, well, you can't do that. This isn't going to work. So, you're right. That's not going to work. Okay, so how can we adjust that? And good ideas don't come from one side of the aisle or the other. They actually come from both sides of the aisle. And actually, I will say this, and I think we got some tape here. I will say this, that we really work well together. Our legislators from this area of the state, Pete and Todd and Samantha and Bob, we all sit down and we agree to disagree on some things. But we work on probably 100 more things that we work to get resolved because we get it. We understand that if we're not working to resolve some of these issues together and getting the things off the table that we can, then we're not doing our job.
When can we expect to see a vote on that, on the dark store legislation?
Well, we're not in session until next January. Mm-hmm. So. The legislation, I think the study committee has come back in September or October with recommendations, and those recommendations will probably go, usually what they do if they recommend it for legislation to go they'll recommend what we call draft legislation, so that'll go to the committee that would normally deal with that, so that would probably go to economic development or one of those. It would go to theirs for further hearings. And so that would happen right after the first of the year. That would be introduced as a bill. They would have hearings on it that people could take it home and look at it, kick the tires on it, you know, and see does this make sense what we're doing. And hopefully everybody walks away from the table a little bit unhappy, because then that means you got a good piece of legislation, because you didn't give anything to, or everything to one person. You kind of made everybody, you know, whole, so they have an opportunity to be invested in whatever that piece of legislation is. So probably I'm thinking sometime January or February if we can keep it moving. And the other thing would be that you can right now, you can go to the state's website and you can go on the website and you can put your information in with your email address, and you can put areas of interest into that state computer system, so that let's say you're interested in dark store legislation, or I don't know if it would be called Walgreens legislation. But if you're looking for taxation type things, you can put that, or driver's licenses, anything that deals with driver's license, okay? Anything that comes through the state that is introduced or proposed as legislation, or is in the process of going for a hearing or something like that, you'll get a ding on your phone and say, okay, I don't need that. You can disregard it. And then the next thing comes up that they're going to be talking about definitions of dark stores. You're going to have a public hearing. It's going to be in Kenosha County next Tuesday. I can go to that. So you'll get notified when those things are happening. And you can also call in our office, put your name in, and we'll notify you when stuff comes up. So the idea is to get as many people involved in the process and be accessible so that we can get that input. So does that help?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions?
You don't see Walker put in the budget? Or
As far as the dark store thing? It could. I mean, let me explain that. It could be a process where... And that's if this gets flushed out well enough that everybody's kind of agreeable. They could just put this in the budget and as an item that would go into the budget. And I guess it does have a fiscal impact, so that's possible that it could go in there. But I think that it's good to have a good discussion about it and get it out there and talk about it. And I'd rather see it go through as a piece of legislation, because then you have a good hearing. And you have input from all of the stakeholders that then there's no question what you're doing and why you're doing it, because you have that ability. But that's always a possibility, that once this gets fleshed out, that it could go into the budget in the early part of the year too. But I'd rather see it just get put across as a piece of legislation. Like I said, our dark store piece of legislation, that looked like that was a done deal, and things got a little bit goofed up with that because of the Walgreens. Because The municipalities wanted both of those to go through, not just one. And that was one of the issues, is the League of Municipalities said, no, we, if it's not both, we don't want just one, we want both of these to go through, so that all of a sudden if we pass one, this one's going to fall to the wayside and we're going to be dealing with that. So they wanted them to go through together, and that was part of the problem too, in the 11th hour, so that didn't work. So I think that there's going to be some, I think that there's going to be some people that will be sitting down and talking, and there will be some agreement, so we'll get it negotiated.
Senator, thank you for taking the time.
I'd like to thank you guys for your input. But it's really important for us to be able to hear issues that you guys have, and so that we can be reactive to that and we can be accessible. By all means, especially with all stuff going on, with all the economic development happening, just because Foxconn's up in Mount Pleasant, that's going to have a huge effect on all of southeastern Wisconsin. So we need to be in the loop for that too. So I would hope that you guys stay engaged with that. And if you have questions, don't be afraid to call us. And if we don't know, we'll try to find out.
I got your cell phone.
I know you do. He's got me on speed dial, so does he. So if there's any other, I'm going to be here for the for Greg's presentation too. So, you know, that was a sad event happening.
Thank you.
So thank you all for doing what you're doing. Because I sat where you guys did too, and it's not an easy job. So thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, probably.
Number 8, that should be right.
Yeah.
Resolution calling in the legislature to enact the automatic voter registration.
Okay. Thank you, Committee Chair Nudo. Before we make a vote on this, I wanted to say a few things to put this issue in context. There are about 5.8 million people who live in Wisconsin. Roughly 4.5 million of them are voting age eligible citizens. In the last presidential election, 2016, there were about 3 million people who voted, which means that there were about 1.5 million people who didn't vote. What's interesting to note is about 500,000 of them were registered voters, but they just didn't vote. About a million aren't registered and simply didn't vote. This is, in my opinion, and I'm sure most people's opinion, is terrible, is a tragedy, that you have, in a democratic republic, these low registration levels and low political participation in regard to voting. The other issue that came to my mind within the last few days as well is that, and this is one of the handouts I gave you, there's a series of handouts I gave you, so you can check where I'm getting this information from the Wisconsin Elections Commission. I noticed in 2016, the last presidential election, there were about 3.6 million registered voters. If you look at the other page in the back, or I think it's on the back side, there are today only 3 million registered voters. We have lost 600,000 registered voters in 2 years. Now you might ask, where did they go? Well, I can tell you where they've gone. There's a very interesting article that I also have in there about voter purging that's been going on in the past several months, with as a result in particular of the Ohio Supreme Court case. Supreme Court ruled that voter purging by a 5-4 decision is legal and acceptable. And roughly, it's the almost identical amount of people that were registered in 2016 are now no longer registered. So we are fighting an uphill battle here. It's not only to try to get people registered, but to try to keep people registered. Because the law allows, the state is allowing people to be purged if they don't practice, you know, don't vote within a 4-year period. And there probably are a lot of people who aren't even aware that they're not registered anymore, because the state sends out a little card saying you need to respond within 30 days. You can only imagine how many people probably threw that in the circular file, not thinking one thing or another. And then they go to vote, and then they realized, oh, you're not on the rolls, you're not registered. What do you mean I'm not registered? Right? You could see this being a real problem. So we have now only about 3 million registered voters, and there's about 1.5 million registered voters.
Now, why automatic voter registration? Well, I think several years ago, Oregon, there's an article in there about Oregon being one of the first states to practice it. The numbers, registration numbers have gone up. Voting numbers have gone up. It seems like an eminently practical thing to do to automatically vote, register people to vote when they go to the DMV for a driver's license or an ID card, which they have to anyway, right, to vote. Now, certainly it's not going to catch all voters because not all voters drive, but it'll catch a big, quite a few. I'm thinking, you know, in Kenosha County, I have some numbers here as well. There are about 168,000 people in Kenosha County. There are about 129,000 over the age of 18. In the last election, Kenosha County had about 75,000 to 77,000 voters, about 91,000 registered voters. So there's probably about 15,000 people who are registered and didn't vote. Many of those might no longer be registered and may not know it. If you take the amount of residents over 18 and subtract registered voters, is roughly 38,000, give or take, of people who are over 18. And if you subtract maybe 10,000 for people who are not legal residents or legal residents and can't vote or people who don't drive, there could be, let's say, 25,000 people in Kenosha County who could be easily registered by an automatic voter registration. If half of them vote, that's 10 to 15,000 people added to the polls, or added to the voting polls. So multiply that by 71 more counties, you're talking hundreds of thousands of people that could be added to the polls, registered very easily, and ultimately be given the opportunity. Would increase the voter turnout. And as you know, our voter turnout is nothing to be that impressed with. In a typical presidential election, you're lucky to get 50 to 50%. We had in the last election 54.5. Kenosha County actually was higher than an average, but Wisconsin was a little bit above. But, you know, we have a long way to go, and I just wanted to put that into context because I can't emphasize more the importance of voter registration and making it easier for people to register and ultimately to practice the most important constitutional, should be constitutional right, namely voting. Thank you.
In reading what I could in the short time that I had your information, I do have some questions because under Oregon's AVR program, it says in almost every state, persons who wish to vote in the 2016 election had to take affirmative steps to register themselves. Mm-hmm. You have to take affirmative steps to vote, do mm-hmm. you not? So, I mean, that's pretty key.
Yeah, well,
even if you're registered, it doesn't mean you're going to go vote.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Right, yeah.
So
we should have 100%
participation. Absolutely.
That'll never happen. Yeah, and I'm not being naive here, but you're right. I mean, ultimately, but the thing is, the first three.
Right.
Absolutely.
And in the, if no response is given, under the new Oregon program, eligible voters who have a qualifying interaction with DMV are notified by mail. They'll be added to voter rolls unless they decline registration or opt out 21 days by returning a postcard to opt out. Mm-hmm. Purposes for primary voting is notification postcard also allows individuals to choose a political party. If no response is given, these individuals become automatically registered as non-affiliated voters, which makes them ineligible to vote in primaries. What's Wisconsin?
We have a semi-open primary.
Okay, let's have.
So I'm just saying, that,
just to make your point.
My point is, I believe again, if they're not eligible to vote in the primaries, mm-hmm. you know, then registering to vote doesn't make any. My point is this: political participation level is not because we don't have people not registered through AVR or any others. It's because of apathy, because of maybe religious reasons, because you don't like the candidates. It's because the heck with this, I'm not going to. That's what it is. And I think forcing it into that position is one thing. That's a state. The DMV is state. It's not local where we vote, and that I think is a problem for me. I mean, there's other things, but I know you want to get going.
Someone else.
Anybody else?
And just one other thing. you said, see, it said here the general election turnout for Wisconsin in 2016 was 67%. That's almost the same as the Great Oregon at 68%. As a matter of fact, in 2012, when they were at 64%, we're at 70%. So, again, with the same day registration, I don't know that that is as big of an issue. I don't know what they had before, but to me, it doesn't seem to be as big of an issue as maybe they had or that we're seeing. I agree. We need more voters voting. I do agree with that. Dumb. Sorry. Yeah.
I agree. I mean, we. Ideal world, we'd have 100% voter turnout, but I don't feel that this is warranted only because in Wisconsin we make it so easy to vote. You could show up at the polls, it takes only a matter of minutes to register, you get to cast your ballot, and you're on your way. Now, if we were a state that had a registration deadline, I'm very much opposed to deadlines like that. If that were the case, I would support this, but I don't feel that this is warranted.
Yeah, I mean, my question would be, I'm not convinced that if people are registered, it's going to make them vote. You know, I don't understand that at all. I mean, I would love, and I think one of the politicians before said it exactly. I mean, you know, this is your right. Don't complain about anything if you don't go out and vote. And I'd like to have 100% of everybody vote. But what are you going to do, send out seek and find missions to get these people to the polls if they're registered and they don't want to vote? I mean, I don't think you can legislate what people's actions are. I mean, I don't think we're losing a ton of people because of the way we have registration. As a matter of fact, the city opens it up to very early registration where there's hardly any lines so that you can go in and, you know, take your time and do it. So, I mean, I have some questions as well. I'm not sure that this needs to...
But I might add, I was just going to say this did come up last session, AB 609. So they had 35 sponsors in the state assembly. So this isn't something that I just pulled out of the air. This has been considered, and from what I've been told, is seriously being considered to be reintroduced at the state level. I just think it would be very important for the county to send a message. Certainly, if someone registers, it doesn't guarantee that they're going to vote. Right. But that first hurdle that is a problematic hurdle for some people is then done away with. The odds of the person voting is increased if they're already registered. And with the voter purging, this is the big problem. A lot of people don't even know this. There are people who are going to go the day the vote... on November 6th, whatever it is, and vote, and are not going to know that they're not registered and may or may not have the necessary identification because they think they've already...
Well, they've had the same identification as you have.
True, but it's going to cause a lot of problems. It just seems to me that this is a practical, efficient, no-brainer way to alleviate a difficult first step for people who drive, who are a legal age, and therefore make it easier for them to vote.
Even with the purging of the voter rolls, again, that takes minutes to go to the polls and register to vote. I mean, it's a single sheet, you show your ID, which you have to show anyways to vote, and you're on your way. You go, you sign your name, they give you your ballot, and you're on your way. Again, if the circumstances were different, I would support this, but, you know, with Assembly Bill 609, and now if this goes in the next session next year, I mean, it seems like the state is already being proactive on this, and I don't think that this is a message that we need to send. It seems like it's a message that they've already gotten.
Well, it doesn't have a majority yet.
Okay.
So,
anybody else want to
talk? So I'm in favor of this, but I want to come at it from a different direction. Take the idea that this will theoretically increase turnout somehow off of the table, just for conceptual purposes. And I want to ask the Corporation Council a question in asking it. We are guaranteed, right, as citizens of the United States, a right by jury trial, are we not?
Yes.
Okay. It's fascinating to me that you can go and get your driver's license, and it automatically enrolls you as a candidate to be selected as a juror, to fulfill part of the Constitution in terms of being part of overseeing the fate of your peers, however that might be defined. But yet somehow it can't just automatically, like, enroll you into the voting list. It's very bizarre. It's weird. And it's something in listening to this discussion I'm thinking about and just saying there shouldn't be so much fear around accessibility. If there is no fear, as what I'm hearing in this room, then it should be a non-issue and this should be an easy vote. Thank you.
Just to go off of Supervisor Hallman's comments, it's my understanding, and maybe somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, that the juror rolls are taken from the voter rolls and not from driver's license, those who are registered to drive in the state. I just wanted to make that point known.
I think you're wrong on that.
What did you say, boy?
I think he's wrong.
Can you be a little bit loud? No, I'm joking.
We didn't hear
you.
Can
you speak up?
Anybody else? Okay, is there a motion?
Make a motion to approve.
Second.
Anybody? Motion made by Supervisor Byrd, second by Supervisor Hallman. On the motion, any discussion? Anybody? I just want to add something, I just have a question. I believe, and I just had a couple minutes to kind of research this, but there is a federal law right now. They say that the state's, DMV has to list them or whatever, register, unless there is a same day voting in effect, which that's what we have in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Now, if that has changed, I'm not really sure if anything else is going to change, whether that they cannot register the same day or what. That would probably be a problem. And the other thing, again, I think it's very easy to register the day of when somebody goes out and vote, and if they don't want to take the time or if they don't think they're registered, there was a comment before that when they get the notice from the state, they just throw it away, they don't even look at it. Well, those people are not going to go even if they're registered. That means that they don't care. Anybody?
And it sounds like the bigger issue is the purging off the rolls. You said we lost 500,000 from the purging off the rolls. And you do have to purge if no one's there. I mean, people die, they move, all kinds of things happen. So you do have to clean up the rolls every once in a while. Maybe 4 years isn't the right amount of time. But I think as Supervisor Rodriguez says, you can just go right back in and register right away. You've got all the information you need because you got to have the information to vote. So I don't see the need for ABR. I don't see the benefit for ABR and from a voter giving people the vote standpoint. So I don't see why putting another piece of legislation in place is going to help that.
Any other comments? If not, we'll take a vote. Probably we should do a roll call on this. We'll start with the governor.
One of them left.
So Elizabeth Van Kamen. A. Yes. Okay. Andy Berg.
Aye. Yes.
John Franco.
Yes.
Boyd Frederick.
Yes.
David Hallman.
Yes.
Mark Nordigan.
Nay.
Zach Rodriguez.
Nay.
Gabe Nuno.
Nay.
4-3.
Didn't speak loud enough, so his shouldn't count.
I think I'm staying.
Oh.
Staying.
4-3, it passes.
Okay, next one, which I can get in there. Let's see, sorry. Which is number 9. Resolution recognizing September 25th, 2018. Before we go to that, I'm sorry. I believe on the previous one, there was a change which everybody was aware of from
yes.
November 16th instead of November 18th.
Yeah. Okay,
I just wanted to get that on the record. Okay, sorry, going back to number 9, resolution recognizing September 25th, 2018 as National Voter Registration Day.
Just quickly on this, I guess I don't need it, but I'm going to ask for it. the blessing, I suppose, of the sponsor. I'd like to add my name to this, because this is something I do agree with. I mean, make it known. People need to register to vote.
Okay. Anybody else wants to speak on that or say anything?
I just want to say that an individual came up to me and asked me to consider this as a potential resolution. It was something that I thought made total sense. I don't see, it's somewhat a symbolic vote, but every year I think it's important for us to recognize the rights that we have and participate in our electoral democracy by not only registering and also, voting as in every election, frankly, not just every 4 years. But this is something I try to tell my kids at school. You don't vote every 4 years, you vote every year. And recognizing it, I think, is a good idea. I think the county would be making a good step in the right direction for something like this.
Okay. Do we have a motion on that? Moved by Mark, second by Andy. Any discussion?
You want roll call?
You guys want a roll call? Roll call.
Andy Berg?
Yes.
Let's start with the
oh, yeah. You think of
Elizabeth Van Kammen?
Yes.
Andy Berg?
Yes.
Yes. John Franco?
Yes.
Boyd Frederick?
Yes.
David Hallman?
Yes.
Mark Nordigan?
Yes.
Zach Rodriguez?
Yes.
Gabe Noodle?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Well, you have the paperwork and sign right now.
Okay, next one. Number 10, resolution to place referendum on the November 2018 ballot and permitting use of marijuana for medical purposes.
Well, I brought this. I think this is another option we have to help us in Kenosha County with two of our major problems with opioids and mental health. I think the number was about 80% of those that are utilizing opioids in the wrong way have mental health issues. By creating or providing another option of medical marijuana, we can dwindle both those numbers. We can dwindle those that are decrease those numbers that are using and decrease those numbers the mental health issues that we're having, and possibly even maybe even fractionally decrease some of our over $3 million we spent sending folks to out of the county for mental health. As was mentioned earlier, there's 30 states that have legalized it, and it's bipartisan. Aside from Colorado and Illinois and California, there's Arkansas, New Mexico, Arizona, Florida, West Virginia, Montana. So, yeah, open it up, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess I'd like to start with this. First of all, anything that can help people alleviate whatever is really serious for them, I don't have a problem with it. I am going to have a problem with marijuana to some extent. Here's why. Medical marijuana products sold to consumers at dispensaries aren't approved. This is from the, oddly enough, Consumer Reports of 2016. By the FDA, without federal guidance or oversight, individual states have struggled to establish the kind of quality assurance protocols and quality assurance managers that exist for FDA-approved drugs. Also, research marijuana's therapeutic value has been hampered, and doctors have been reluctant to step into the fray. Shortcomings force consumers to take chances, really. What they're saying, basically, is there's pesticides, there's metals, there's all kinds of things that end up into the medical marijuana. American Cancer Society has not for or against it. They just were bringing up the different issues about it. I mean, it does help nauseating and vomiting and those types of things. It does help with PTSD. It helps with food intake for HIV patients. Again, they're talking about good things that it does help. Marijuana can also pose some harm to users. While the most common effect marijuana is feeling the euphoria or high, it can also lower the user's control over movement, cause disorientation, and sometimes cause unpleasant thoughts or feelings, anxiety, paranoia. It's not everybody, it's a sample of people. The THC and other cannabinoids in the body, it also delivers harmful substances to the users, and those chewed clothes by, and including many of those substances found in tobacco smoke. So this is now smoking that. So the issue of smoking it is the biggest issue for me. If I am legally allowed to smoke marijuana because I can medically do it, it's time for my marijuana. Don't mind me, I'm here smoking. It affects everybody in the room. Now, if it's cannabis oil, if it's some other type of thing, that's fine. But smoking it is where the issue comes in for me. The last thing that the American Cancer Society says, because this being a controlled substance, right, it's a federal offense, it makes it tough for them to even do any type of research on it because of that. The White House is talking about taking that away. That would get us more research, more development, more looking at the way of having it properly done. I don't think there's enough oversight to make sure, because the different levels in the different marijuana plants are all over the place. This is all facts. It isn't like you're going to go get a 20 milligram aspirin. It's always going to be 20 milligrams of aspirin. It's going to be different levels of it. So again, it's from American Cancer Society. They are saying that the society's advocacy affiliate has not taken a position on legalization of marijuana for medical purposes because of the need for more scientific research on marijuana's potential benefits and harms. However, American Cancer Society opposes the smoking or vaping of marijuana and other cannabinoids, in public places because of the carcinogens in marijuana smoke pose numerous health hazards to the patient and others in patient's presence. So I don't think a sweeping, let's make marijuana, medical marijuana, legal, it is the right thing to be looking at. Again, the other products that come from it, from processing it through, I think that's a no-brainer, absolute no-brainer. So this would have to be a lot sharper for me to vote on, just based on the research that's coming out, not from me, but from others doing it, and it sounds absolutely logical to me. And I don't know if I should bring, oh, never mind.
Okay.
I'm done.
Okay. Anybody else want to say anything? Is there a motion?
I got a question. I can hardly not speak, right, when an issue comes up. But see, my problem with this is, I mean, I think that people are looking at legalizing, you know, for medicinal purposes, is a foot in the door to legalizing marijuana. Mm-hmm. And I have no problem with using it medicinally. I absolutely do not. And if it could be regulated that way and used that way, that would be fine. My issue comes in that. I mean, in the state of Wisconsin, we like to drink, okay? We have a problem with OWIs in Wisconsin, right? I mean, we're always hearing about that. Now let's throw marijuana into that mix, and you got some impaired, you know, your reflexes are impaired a little bit. What's that going to do to the mix? So, I mean, I'd like to see more studies. I thought I saw something come out of Colorado that they had more traffic issues with people on this. I haven't done my research. I didn't get this on your committee till I looked at it at the last minute, so I haven't done a lot of research on it, but I mean, that's my concern. I mean, I think this needs to be researched a little more before we jump into this pool. While I totally agree on medicinal marijuana, I have no problem with that at all, but if it could be regulated to that and kept within that, I don't know how you're going to do that. So those are my comments.
On the Colorado
No, I can
go after. Sure. No, I was just going to say on the Colorado thing, I'm looking for the stats on it. They're having a bunch of problems. The children's eating the edibles, going to the hospitals, having problems. This is because it's recreational. More kids are getting kicked out of school because they're high in school. They're not supposed to be. It's at an age limit. But yet, there's more of that happening, and it is significantly higher. A lot more illegal marijuana is also being sold there, too. So there are other issues that are coming up, and this is just not the golden ticket. They are experiencing. Now, will they figure them out? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. So I don't think it's the end all, you know, like everyone thinks it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, in some of my travels doing things with NACO and WCA, I have met the gentleman who was the state assemblyman who actually legalized it for Colorado. We actually had a very nice long conversation about it. Have actually toured dispensaries. People talk about it like it's the Wild West. It's not. Every single plant is tagged. Things are tracked by sheriff's deputies. It's a very heavily regulated system that they have going. Are there issues with traffic fatalities? Yeah, I think I saw something like pedestrian fatalities were up like 10 or 12% for some odd reason as a component of this. But let's bear in mind, we are the state that likes to drink. I mean, it's really unheard of anywhere else in, you know, 49 other states where you're going to encounter so many people who have 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 OWIs. I know we have improved in terms of making sure that that kind of thing does not happen, and people who do have those records are found and dealt with in other ways. But I certainly don't think a state having that kind of history, really national legacy, dare I say it, should lean into this discussion. That just makes us look bad, you know. And somebody talked about Kenosha questioning this a bit. I said, I don't know. I'm not quite sure how popular the Church of the Teetotalers is in the town of the auto workers that like their libations. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I was just going to say, I think we have to be careful not to conflate the legalization of recreational use of marijuana with the legalization of the medicinal use of marijuana. It's easy to kind of confuse those two and start quoting facts or characteristics of one and mixing them with the other. I mean, 30 states already have done this. You know, 60% of the United States has legalized medicinal use of marijuana. It's highly regulated. It's only given to patients with a doctor's notification that says that, you know, they're using it for pain relief. This is, we're not talking about, you know, selling it at Walgreens to anyone who is 18 or older, 21 and older, who, you know, who can pay for it. We got to be careful not to look at the issue rationally here. I don't have a problem with this at all. I think it makes total sense. The irony to me is that the opioids, the legal drug that that people use, is more addictive and more dangerous than this Schedule One illegal drug. Frankly, I'm not sure why marijuana is a Schedule One drug. It has medicinal purposes. It's pretty well established. To me, that's the irony. We allow opioids, but we're like panicking about medicinal use of marijuana. Seems silly to me. So,
my issue with this is similar to Supervisor Nordigan's, is that this resolution in front of us is very broad. I think, you know, going off of some of my colleagues' comments with, you know, we're Wisconsin, we drink, yet, you know, drinking's still legal, I think that's irresponsible, because the way I read into it, and I'm sure the way other people read into it, is saying, well, we've already got a drinking issue, so what difference does it make if we add another issue? And that's my problem with this. And I mean, yes, it does have medicinal value. Opioids, to an extent, do have a medicinal value. That doesn't, I mean, they're getting abused. That's something I think we can all agree on. But we also understand that we cannot just, you know, simply, they're not just open to the public. And my concern with this is it's too broad. It leaves too many questions unanswered. I agree with Supervisor Gentz. We need a lot more research. And so for those reasons, I won't be supporting this tonight.
I'm probably the one person who has someone they live with that's on opioids and what they deal with the pain. I have, my wife is on morphine, and I've got to go up and get scripts for her all the time. Doctors are now cutting back on giving opioids out, which is causing people to go to other alternatives when it comes to pain management. It's sad, but you know, doctors say, well, I don't want to do this. This is overprescribing for you. So that, this is what I see as somewhat as the next, I agree with TH, you know, the creams and everything else, that is coming to be almost necessary now, because people are now, that's how they're overprescribing themselves with the opioids. Eventually, if things get tighter and tighter with what doctors have to do, then patients And there's thousands and thousands of patients that are in too much pain right now. They're going to look for other alternatives. I think this is a viable alternative because 30 states are doing it. They've figured out a way. We can follow what they've already done.
I just want to say it's hard to not conflate the two, to Supervisor Franco's point, when I'm reading the whereases, and most of them are whereas legalizing marijuana. I mean, so conflating them is right here in this resolution. I mean, 30 states have legalized medicinal, but legalizing and taxing marijuana could significantly increase state tax. I mean, this to me seems, if it was just to the medicinal point, I agree with you, Supervisor Franco. I agree with you, Supervisor Frederick. If it's focused on the medicinal and 30 states have done it, I'd like to see how they're doing it, how they're regulating it, how it would work. But just to have a resolution like this to send forward, I mean, half of this resolution says we're almost in favor of legalizing it. So, I mean, and that's a discussion you can have on your own time. But, I mean, for medicinal, I'm 100% in favor, but that's not really what this is focused on, and I think we need a little more study on it. That's my comments. Thank you.
I don't know that the folks are aware that there are states that have both running. And so for those purposes, what's on the quote-unquote recreational side is not necessarily the same that's on the medical side. Everything is regulated, dispensaries are licensed, plants are tracked. The Department of Justice is involved in those states quite heavily, certainly county law enforcement as well. I mean, it's regulated just like you would anything else. I think it's important to note socially, for whatever reason, and there's consumer data that can speak to this, the two crowds, the crowd that likes to hang out and drink isn't necessarily the crowd that likes to hang out and smoke, and that there may be a tiny bit of overlap, but they're not the same, so it's not piling one problem on top of another. Certainly folks who have medical issues can be more open about it in terms of this is a treatment option. Dare I say, a kind of coming out of the closet about that. I know I have a friend of mine down in Chicago. He uses medically. He works for one of the top three law firms in the country. If he did not smoke, he literally would not be able to function. I mean, he's a genius, legal mind, and a great person. But if he didn't, he would not be able to function due to his medical condition. So I just want to make folks aware that, you know, it's not the Wild West that people are making it out to be.
Anybody? I was going to say, I mean, I will admit that there are a couple whereases that are overly broad. I won't deny that. That seem to imply that there is using a language to imply that maybe making the connection between recreational and medicinal use of marijuana. I will agree to that. However, it's clearly stated in the "be it further resolved." It's stated very clearly that we're not talking about that. I don't know if the language of the resolution was, because it was overly broad, has scared some people off. But, I mean, if you look at the referendum, the stated referendum, should the state of Wisconsin allow individuals with debilitating medical conditions to use and safely access marijuana for medical purposes if those individuals have a written recommendation from a licensed Wisconsin physician? That's what the referendum is going to state. It's not going to state anything, any of the overly broad language on a couple of the whereases that seem to imply or make this connection between recreational and medicinal. To me, that's the kicker right there. We could amend the resolution and take out a couple of whereases if some people want, but ultimately, when it comes down to it, what's really going on in the advisory referendum? It's very clear. It has to do with medicinal use. Has nothing to do with recreational use. So I will be supporting this either way.
Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Supervisor, moved by Supervisor Frank, and second by Supervisor. On the motion, any questions, comments, whatever?
I don't know of another drug that you smoke, whether it's over the counter, behind the counter, or other, that's considered medicinal. You don't smoke. There might be some vaping because you have to get into the lungs, I understand. And according, again, to the American Cancer Society, the smoking of it does help in some in a very short period of time as opposed to the rubs or the cannabis oil or anything like that. Just because we aren't pulling out the smoking part of that alone, I can't support that part of it. And then I'm not sure where the data came from about the smokers and drinkers not being in the same group. I disagree with that, but I don't have any data saying that. I'm not saying they're all that way, but I disagree with that. I think the smokers and the drinkers are pretty well versed in each other and become more so as it becomes allowed.
Anybody else? I just want to add something. I was listening to that. I was going to make some comments before, but I guess at this point, this is the only thing I want to say. I'm going to vote against the resolution. Pretty much all my objections were stated before, but more than anything else is the fact, yes, we do have a drinking problem here in Kenosha, and I think with this year, it's going to be another problem, and just because we got one, I don't want to add another one. So that's one of the reasons, or one of the reasons, let's put it in that way, that I'm going to be voting against that. Any comments from anybody else? Or if not, we'll take a roll call vote.
Okay. Youth and Governance, Elizabeth Van Kammen, in favor. Andy Berg.
Yes.
John Franco.
Yes.
Boyd Frederick.
Yes.
David Hallman.
Yes.
Mark Nornigan.
Nay.
Zach Rodriguez.
Nay.
Gabe Noodle.
Nay.
4-3, motion passes.
Okay, number 11. All the matters that may be appropriately brought before the committee. The only thing I want to say is next month we're going to go back to our regular time, 6 o'clock. And and also we have another guest scheduled, so I think Representative Mark is going to be here. And, motion to adjourn, anyone?
Second.
Motion second by I guess that you first do that, I'll say your last name.
That's fine.
And Supervisor Rodriguez, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We're adjourned.